Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome to the morning briefing for Friday, October 20th, 2017. Only 11 days from Halloween. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and today's Friday edition of the Morning Briefing, it's looking good. Coming up, we're going to speak to the veterans of Forum Wars Director of Programs, Lynn Rolfe. Lynn's going to fill us in on a great scholarship program the VFW has. And later, we'll be joined by a Vietnam veteran who made a fairly recent and successful move into the world of stand-up comedy down in Jacksonville, Florida. His name is Pete Burden, and he's proof that if you want to chase your dreams, it's not too late. And there's no time like the present. All of that on the way, but we kick it off now with Morning Briefing super producer Jake Hughes in studio. Jake, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Eric, how are you?
Not so great, just because I'm an Oakland Raider fan, right? Which surprises people. They're like, well, you're from Connecticut. And yeah, Connecticut doesn't have a professional football team. I don't like any Boston team by any stretch of the imagination, and the Patriots were awful until I was about, I guess, 96 when they went to the Super Bowl with Drew Bledsoe at quarterback. So never a Patriots fan. Giants are kind of like a distant second team for me. The Jets, ugh, no thank you.
Dude, who likes the Jets?
The Raiders, and to be honest, as a kid, now, yes, I have a lot of family in Northern California, but that silver and black, man, and the mystique of the Raiders. As a football free agent, that just kind of became my team. They played last night on Thursday Night Football, and this year, for whatever reason, Thursday Night Football has had some fantastic games. None better than last night's game. And when the second half came around and I realized, oh my God, it's like 10:30 at night. This is after I'm usually going to bed. And the second half is just starting. This game's going to be on until midnight. Sure enough, it was. I kept almost hoping that they would either take a big lead or fall behind by a lot so I could just go to sleep. Didn't happen. Came down to the last play of the game. And it was a bizarre finish where the last play of the game happened four or five times. They ran four or five plays because of penalties, essentially. The game just kept going on and on and on. Thankfully, I stayed up until midnight, which is way past my bedtime. I mean, I'm up at, you know, around 5 a.m. leaving the house. My team won, so my lack of sleep is at least for my favorite team winning a game. But I'm tired today, you know? Just happens. Now, that doesn't mean anything bad about the show, because as I said, we've got a great show coming up. Lynn Rolfe from the VFW, Pete Burden, Marine Corps Vietnam veteran, former platoon sergeant, who I actually met while I was working down in Jacksonville, Florida at the recruiting district. He worked also for the recruiting district and still does. And when he found out that I was a big fan of stand-up comedy, knew a lot about it, had done a little bit of it myself once or twice at like open mics during my Navy career, we'd talk about stand-up comedy, and it was clear the guy really loved stand-up, just loved going to the Comedy Zone down there in Jacksonville. And a few years ago, I start seeing like, hey, I'm going to be going to an open mic if anybody wants to come see me stand on stage and try to make people laugh. It's gone from that point of just going to a couple open mics a few years ago to the point where he's now like a featured act, part of big shows that are traveling around that North Florida area. So really a pretty cool story, and I'm looking forward to talking to my old friend Pete about that and about how, you know, as I said, it's a great opportunity to point out that if you have something that you've wanted to try to do, don't ever say it's too late, man. Pete's a Vietnam veteran. Vietnam ended in what, 74, 75, something like that. Do the math, man. Even if he served at the very end of Vietnam, that would have him born sometime around like 56, which would put him in his 60s. I mean, Vietnam veterans are in their 60s or older now. He didn't say, it's too late. I didn't get an early enough start on this. No, he got up on that stage and did his thing, and it's a pretty pretty awesome story. Now, speaking of that, is there anything that you've ever wanted to try to do, Jake? Like anything that you thought, you know, maybe that would be fun. Maybe I could try to do it. Like stand-up comedy.
Honestly, stand-up comedy.
Really?
Because I've said before that making people laugh is the best feeling in the world for me. I love entertaining. I love performing. I've done Whose Line Is It Anyway improv games in front of like 1,000 people, which is one of the best moments of my life. But stand-up comedy is a whole other beast where you have to have a prepared set of material.
Yeah.
And I just get nervous about it. I don't know if I could keep it going that long, but it's something I've always wanted to try, like an open mic or something.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think anyone who's ever been funny in their life, who's ever been a little bit funny, and I mean actually funny, not people who are like, well, I'm considered one of the funniest people in my office. Like, oh, are you? Congratulations. I mean people who are actually like get their friends and even people they don't know to just crack up and really telling a story is what comedy is. There was an era, and there still are people who tell jokes. They go up and they've got their one-liners and everything. Mitch Hedberg comes to mind for me. My favorite comedians are storytellers. People like John Mulaney. He's a fantastic comedian who tells stories about growing up, although almost in that old school way of ripping off the jokes, but like telling the story of his father driving. I think he had like 4 or 5 brothers and sisters, and they saw McDonald's, and his father starts pulling into McDonald's, and they're little kids, and they're like, yeah. And his father ends up just buying like a small black coffee and then pulling off. Like goes through the drive-thru, gets a small black coffee and pulls off. That story, the way I told it, not all that funny. Listen to John Mulaney tell it and how heartbreaking it was.
That would crush you as a kid, man. Yeah.
You're like 5, 6 years old, and you're like, McDonald's, McDan. Your dad just pulls in like one coffee, black. Get it? Give him $2.
Not even the McDonald's. It's the whole experience of the Happy Meal and the little crappy plastic toy that's like worth $1 million to you when you're like 5 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. But there are people who will tell that story and be like, oh, so when I was a kid, We went to McDonald's, and my dad, I thought I'd get a Happy Meal, and my dad, he just got a coffee, and then we drove away, and I didn't get a Happy Meal. There's people who tell that story, and then there's people that'll do it the John Mulaney way, or people who will do things the George Carlin way and look at society and point the magnifying glass right back at society, holding a magnifying glass up to a mirror. That's how I would describe the comedy of George Carlin. But so many great comedians out there, and one of them is a Vietnam veteran who just started doing it a couple years ago, and I look forward to talking to him about that coming up later in the show. Now, here's an interesting story, and this is one that I saw called out by a former guest of the show. John Lillier, you know him from This Ain't Hell? One of my favorite websites. It's basically a stolen valor tracking website. And John doesn't care if you're going to sue him. John doesn't care if you're going to call him names or whatever you're going to do. John, he's not too worried about that because he does his homework and he gets DD-214s through Freedom of Information Act requests, things like that. Well, he, as well as Don Shipley, who's a retired SEAL, who also seems to have a lot of fun, a lot of videos on YouTube of him calling out specifically people who claim to be SEALs. Well, there's this guy, John Garofalo, right? Claimed he was a SEAL and a Vietnam veteran in a Fox News segment earlier this month, saying that he had made, and he, here's the thing. This guy, John Garofalo, does this amazing work where he makes these glass presidential seals, and he says he's made them for a few other presidents, and he made one for President Trump, and it's this huge, beautiful, ornate piece that he put together. A talented, skilled man. Why he had to add Navy SEAL and Vietnam veteran on top of it, I don't know, but it was called out by This Ain't Hell and Don Shipley, and now it's been called out by everybody. We've got Military Times has it on their front page. He said that he was in Fox News. He said, I'm a SEAL. I did this. He was awarded 22 commendations, including 2 Purple Hearts. No, not true.
He never even served?
Well, it says that he never served in Vietnam, never received a Purple Heart, and was never a SEAL. So I don't know exactly what he did besides serving in the Navy from September 6th, 1963 to September 6th, 1967 as an ABH. Now, in the Navy, instead of our MOS, we have ratings, and they are, like, if I told you I was a J01, that means I was a journalist first class.
Yeah.
And then we had a merger, and I became a mass communication specialist first class after they merged us with photographers. ABH is Aviation Bosun's Mate. So that may not make much sense to you. You might not know what that is. A bosun's mate is someone who deals with anchors and seamanship, essentially, on a ship. An aviation bosun's mate are essentially the guys who move around aircraft on the flight deck. So the ones who take care of the aircraft in the hangar deck, as well as on the flight deck, as well as on the flight line if you're at a shore installation. So, you know, he did that, and... you know, he seems like he had an honorable career. It doesn't say that he was kicked out or anything. He did 4 years. Not good enough for him. He just kept lying about being a SEAL, lying about Vietnam. Turns out, like, Rota, Spain was the only overseas duty that he ever did. Now, Vietnam era, yes, but not in Vietnam. And we'll be talking to, of course, a Vietnam veteran later today. And I know quite a few of them. We're also going to be talking to the VFW. I've pointed out in the past, I'm a VFW member. And a lot of the Vietnam vets at my post up in Huntington, New York, would talk about the fact that there were a lot of people who claimed to be Vietnam veterans who were never actually in Vietnam. They never set foot in country. They were just in during the Vietnam era.
Well, I think it's because Vietnam specifically has this air of, maybe you could say mystique, because, I mean, World War II, everyone looks upon those guys as heroes. But when it comes to Vietnam, it's almost more of a sympathy thing, because Vietnam was such a horrible experience for so many people that adding that to your quote-unquote resume gives you a special consideration. Like, I don't know if Fox News would want to talk to this guy if he wasn't also a SEAL and a veteran. Sure, he may make beautiful artwork.
Oh, he does, yeah.
But at the same time, is that enough to get him on national news? Well, maybe the added benefit of, oh, also, I was a Navy SEAL and a Vietnam veteran, that gives him that extra consideration. Yeah.
I think if he had just said, I'm a Navy veteran and I make these things, that would have been enough. Just making this thing. I mean, if you haven't had a chance, you're going to be able to look up John Garofalo. So you're going to be able to find the news story about him. Don Shipley, retired SEAL, again, who outs people who have said, hey, I was a SEAL. Well, it's pretty easy for the SEALs to know who was and who wasn't. Here's the weird thing about this story. There were former SEALs, legit former SEALs, who confirmed that Garofalo was a SEAL. They said that he was. Where does that come from? Is it just they met him at some point in time and he was able to kind of nonsense his way through? And was he just a good liar who learned enough about SEAL training to be able to say, I was one? That's an interesting question, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And you got to think that it had to have been just the guy must just be a fantastic liar, because I don't know a SEAL that would lie for someone else like that, because that's a very tight-knit community.
Yeah, they tend to they tend to be very stringent on who can and cannot say that they were a SEAL. I mean, if you were attached to one of the SEAL teams, like, I know a guy who was a yeoman, he was an administration guy, did paperwork, worked for one of the SEAL teams, he wasn't a SEAL. And if you said he was, that would cause some problems for him down the road with those guys. So the fact that there were former SEALs, and as well as the guy's family who were around at the time, like, shouldn't you have known what he was doing? And not, like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's very strange that that happened. But when it comes to someone saying that they're a SEAL, and it's amazing, I met maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 during my entire 13 years in the Navy, knew a handful before I joined, family, friends, and stuff like that. It's amazing. Since I've gotten out, I seem to have met like 50 Navy SEALs. And when they start talking about being SEALs, and then you go, oh, really? I was in the Navy. Then they kind of, their story changes a little bit, and they'll be very careful on what they're divulging. And they'll, of course, use the, like, well, I'm not at liberty to discuss everything that I did. I was like, No, I totally understand that, super secret guy. But what team were you on, and where were you, and when were you? Because I know some guys who are on some of the teams, and I'd love to ask them if they know you. I think they'd think it was pretty cool that I met one of their buddies out at this event or whatever. Yeah. That usually gets them tap dancing away. Like, yeah. Well, you know, I was on team 20. It's like a, you know, experimental SEAL division thing.
See, because people don't realize how really relatively small the Special Forces community is. Like, I was in the Army for 13 years. I never met a Green Beret, except I met it, well, twice. Once when they did a mission with us in Iraq, and it was horrible, by the way, because it, long story short, they undid a lot of hard work we did, earning hearts and minds and all that good stuff. But anyway, the other time I would see them would be when they come to do recruiting drives at basic training, where they basically give the pitch of, you know, you can still go special forces if you want, blah, blah, blah. But like, I would never claim to met, oh yeah, I met a whole bunch of the Delta guys. I've never even seen those guys.
Oh no, I've not come across any Delta Force guys. Now, Green Berets, yes, I absolutely did in Afghanistan. Fairly regularly. And part of the reason for that was the deputy commander of my region was in fact one himself. Now, he was at the general officer level at this point, but you know, he interacted with them a lot. He had a lot to do with the Special Operations Command operations in Afghanistan. So because of my working for him almost directly, I had a colonel in between me and him, but I worked for the colonel and then general for quite a bit. I came across the ODA guys that were over there numerous times, but again, only in Afghanistan. And I never came across anybody who was from Delta. You know, that wasn't something that was there. And up in my region, I know that there were SEALs operating in our region at times, but I never came across them actually there. So it's kind of rare to come across it. But if someone like you, who served 13 years in the Army, never actually came across Green Berets more than one or two times, that should make people kind of question, again, yeah, depending on where they live. Now, if you live near a place where there are a lot of special operations community, okay, then there's a chance that you might be meeting them. If yeah, you're out near Damneck and Little Creek, where the SEALs on the East Coast are out of, or down near Coronado and San Diego on the West Coast, okay, then you might meet a few of them. If you were in New York City and you meet a whole bunch of Navy SEALs over the course of your daily life, there's a good chance that your detection meter should be going off there. Mine always does whenever someone makes a claim that just doesn't make sense. You know, what's the worst example you have of someone trying to do that, trying to tell a story like, oh yeah, I was this, and you go, I don't know about that, and start hearing any details that made you question them?
I actually have, I don't know what to say exactly, but I've never had the opportunity to catch a stolen valor. I've never seen it in real life. I mean, I just never have. I want to so badly. I want to be able to pull up my phone and record some dude wearing, yeah, you know, really wrong ACUs just kind of tear him down, because it sounds like a lot of fun, I've never been able to.
It is fun. It's also very irritating. Shortly after I got back from Afghanistan and got out of the Navy, I was home. And was out at a bar with a couple of friends and heard a guy telling a story about he was in Afghanistan. And I asked him, I was like, oh, where in Afghanistan were you? And he's like, oh, yeah, man, I was in the stuff. I was in Baghdad. It's like, Baghdad, Afghanistan? That didn't go too well for him. He was, you know, a lot of the time you see it, the two times that I've seen it that are my most favorite to recall, it's someone trying to chat up a lady, generally. So there was that time. And then there was one where a guy chose something so specific, and there are so few people that do it, and he had no idea what my job was at the time. It really didn't work out well for him and was really embarrassing for him.
Was that the guy you said, you told the story before about he claimed he was a Blue Angel?
Yes. There are only like 7 Blue Angels. There are 7 people that fly, 6 during the show, and then there's number 7 who's the announcer and kind of the public affairs, you know, face to the media, does the media flights and all that stuff. Usually that someone does that job for 1 year and then becomes a team member after that. But there were 7 at the time, and I knew them. I was working with them like every couple of months. I knew each and every one of them by name, face, voice. Like, I knew who they were. I could name them to you. And this kid who was like 19, 20 years old is claiming he was a Blue Angel. Not only that, claiming he was a Blue Angel stationed in Jacksonville. That's where I was stationed when it was happening, because I worked in recruiting. And the Blue Angels would come down to the Jacksonville Air Show, the Gainesville Air Show up in Beaufort, South Carolina. We have various places that I would work with them. One, they're not stationed in Jacksonville. The Blue Angels, if you're going to pretend you're a Blue Angel, one, don't be 18, 19 years old, because they're all like late 20s at the youngest, yeah, because you have to be in for a while. You have to prove yourself as an amazing pilot. They are essentially the best pilots that we have in the United States Navy, who have the best pilots in the world. I mean, anyone who can land on an aircraft carrier, that puts them in a special category, mm-hmm, of pilot. They're stationed in Pensacola, if you want to pretend to be one of them. Don't talk about being stationed at Naval Air Station Jacksonville. Like, yeah, I'm a Blue Angel. I'm up at Jacksonville. What are you talking about? No, come on, man. Do your research. You can look that up on Wikipedia. You can go on there and be like, where are the Blue? Hey, Siri, where are the Blue Angels station? Like, where are they based out of? All that different stuff. But, you know, Don Shipley is a fascinating guy who I'm going to reach out to, and hopefully we can get him to come on the show. I don't know why I haven't reached out to him earlier, but he is, again, I believe a retired senior chief SEAL, and some of his videos, if you haven't had the chance to watch them, they are hilarious. Like, we're still going to talk to a Marine Corps and Vietnam vet who went into stand-up. Don Shipley could go into stand-up if he wants, because his videos, he and his wife, they just go after these guys, and he's so good at it, where he'll call a guy up and he'll start asking questions about his time, like, hey, I heard you were a SEAL, and start asking questions like, oh yeah, where were you? Who was in charge of that unit when you were there? Who was this? Who was that? Because he knows everybody. He knows all of them. So when you start making stuff up, he'll sometimes give you a bit of rope to hang yourself with. Sometimes he's impressed by the research that some of them have done, like, oh, okay, that was your commanding officer. Well, where is he now? Do you know where he is now? Oh, no, well, I do. Should I call him up? If I call him up and ask him, is he going to remember you? No, he didn't have a lot of people working for him. So you'd think he'd remember you, right? And then the people would be like, I don't need anybody. Who are you to question my service in the Navy Special Operations Forces and blah, 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 blah. And he'll be like, well, who am I? I'm Senior Chief, not Shipley. I'm a retired Navy SEAL, and I don't believe you. Well, there you go. That's all you need. All you need to know about that. Now, here's another interesting story, and this is one, you know, we've talked about the issue of hazing a few times on the show.
Mm-hmm.
In San Diego, the 1st Marine Division, they've had a hazing scandal going on since June. The alleged hazing has included outright physical assault. This is according to the Marine Corps. And then here are some of the other things. Forced alcohol consumption, that's not cool. You can't make someone drink something. You're not allowed to do that. In this day and age.
I couldn't even make a private drink a canteen of water.
Oh, yeah, they did that at boot camp.
Oh, yeah, when I was in, the forced hydration drills, you can't do that anymore.
Forced hydration, or if you messed up, they'd have you drink like one or two canteens of water and then do sit-ups until you put that couple of canteens of water back on the floor.
I had to do that once when I couldn't perform for a urinalysis. Four canteens of water, and they smoked the snot out of me.
Yeah, for us, I remember, I was part of the division staff because I was a sea cadet before I joined the Navy. So they're like, oh, so you know close order drill and everything? I was like, yeah, I know how to call it and everything. So I ended up being the recruit chief petty officer for my division, P-days through graduation. And there was, there was a day where I don't remember what the division staff did. There were like six of us that held positions. We messed up and they made all of us drink water and then all get in line and push ups till you puked, essentially. And we weren't done until everyone had thrown up.
Oh,
yeah. It was really unpleasant, let me tell you. So, and that wasn't that long ago. That was 20 years ago. I'm not talking about like, you know, back in the Full Metal Jacket, Arlie Ermey, Vietnam days. This was 1998. President Clinton, all that stuff, kinder, gentler Navy, even back then. But here's some of the things that were also included on this list of hazing. I want to get your take on this because I wasn't so sure about these things actually being hazing. Forced haircuts.
No, we made them get haircuts every Sunday.
I guess this is people like holding someone down and giving them a haircut maybe. But, you know, Marines, they got that high and tight. They have their standards. They like sticking to it. What haircut are you going to have that's different from somebody else in the Marine Corps? So I wondered about that. Here's the one that I really, really didn't understand. And let me know what you think about this. Making Marines do fitness exercises for not knowing certain information.
That is par for the course. There's even in the bleeding manual, there is a list of exercises we are allowed to do called corrective training. There's a list of 10 exercises that are approved. Do we always follow that? No. But anyway, but there's that says that this is for corrective training. And if you don't know something, it's okay to make them over there do like 15, 20 push-ups, come back and try again.
Yeah. So apparently this is not allowed in today's Marine Corps, which a lot of Marines are saying, what's going on, man? Why, how is this not allowed? This is, if you are asked, you know, who it's some information on Chesty Puller, birthday of the Marine Corps, dates of the famous battles that the Marine Corps has taken part in, like Okinawa and what have you. If you don't know it, then yeah, you'd probably be pushing till you did. You know what I mean? That's just kind of how it goes. Putting that in the same category as physical assault, forced alcohol consumption, even forced haircuts, which is, again, kind of a weird one, but okay. I guess I could see how that could be a negative thing that could be considered hazing. I could see that. But making Marines do fitness exercises for not knowing certain information, that is a weird one. I don't know about that. We'll have to talk to some of our Marine Corps friends and see their interpretation of what exactly that means. But here's the thing of the story. Since then, around 30 Marines have been sent to the brig for allegations of hazing, and at least 16 have been administratively separated since June in regards to hazing. So that is a pretty fascinating story. I don't know exactly what making people do push-ups because they don't know information. Again, I don't know how that qualifies as hazing. Some of the other stuff on there, physical assault, forced alcohol consumption, particularly not cool. But just one of those interesting stories where when people talk about the military getting soft, I look at a story like that where making somebody do sit-ups or push-ups because they didn't know an answer to a trivia question or a history question or a military standard. That was, again, par for the course back in our day. Maybe there's another level to the story we don't know. I don't know. I do know this is a Morning Briefing, and we're back after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
Welcome back to the Morning Briefing. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer on the other side of the glass. And we both work at CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. And what are we doing here? Well, we're obviously doing a morning show, but we're also connecting vets every day. And we do that through our multimedia platform. Multimedia platform, you say? Well, yeah. Okay, so we've got the broadcast that we have here, which you can find on the ConnectingVets.com website. We've got our print stories. We've got podcasts available for download. We've got everything that you could possibly want that's going to keep you well informed on everything that's available to you as a veteran, as well as the news that you would want to know about as a veteran. Why do we know what news you'd want to know about as a veteran? Because we are veterans. Everybody here either served themselves or is very closely related to the veteran community. How closely related? Well, how about military spouses, the children of veterans, and then, of course, the veterans themselves, like myself and Jake. 13 years in the Army for Jake, 13 years in the Navy for me. Combine the two of us, we're a 26-year E-12, which I know, it's as impressive as it sounds. Best way to be kept up to date on what Jake, myself, Jonathan, Phil, Caitlin, Mac, Kayla, Abby, the whole team, Matt Saintson, can't forget about him. The best way to keep up on what we are doing here at ConnectingVets.com, follow us on social media. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Little tap on your phone or click on your mouse, and your life as a veteran can change for the better. You know, during those 13 years, I was lucky enough to spend 3 of them working with our next guest. He is, well, an interesting character, and he's a guy who I came across when I was working at Navy Recruiting District, Jacksonville, Florida, where I was the public affairs officer from 2005 to 2008. That was, let me do the math here. Let's see, it's 2017, so that was 12 years ago. Oh my God, I'm getting old. But while I was there, we kind of bonded over a common love for stand-up comedy. Now, my love for it is primarily just in enjoying it and watching it and complaining about the comics that I don't like. His, well, he's taken it to another level, and we're going to talk to him about that and much more right now on the Morning Briefing. Please welcome Marine Corps veteran Pete Burden. Pete, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm getting over a cold, but you don't want to hear about my troubles, Pete. I know. But as I mentioned, you served in the United States Marine Corps. So tell us a little bit about that. When did you join? Where did you serve? What did you do? And all the background of Pete the Marine.
Sure. But let me say one thing. We're on the radio, so sometime during this interview, I may start to slur my speech. I haven't been drinking, but well, here's a public service announcement. Do not buy your dentures on eBay, Craigslist, or from a funeral director. I think the guy ripped me off, to be honest with you. He said one size fits all, but...
Well, did he give you at least a good discount?
No. No. Just here. 92-year-old Japanese man happened to be dead there. Anyway, I joined the Marine Corps in 1965. I graduated from Nyack High School. And I, as corny as it sounds to the millenniums, I was really impressed with President Kennedy's speech, who's an idol of mine, by the way. that that's not what your country can do for you, but that's what you can do for your country. So I said, I'm going to serve in the military. I was so geeky, I had in my room not posters of whoever Farrah Fawcett was in 1965, but I had Navy and Marine Corps posters up. I used to go down to the post office and see the recruiters. They'd give me stuff. And I wanted to join the Marine Corps, but I wrestled in high school. I started in the fifth grade. And in high school, I wrestled as a senior at 92 pounds, which amazes me because my 21-year-old daughter weighs 105. I could have worn her clothes and got out of it altogether, you know? But I went to the parking lot of Corvette Shopping Center. There's a photo mat there about that size. And in one corner was the Marine, one corner was the Navy recruiter who went to my church. His name was Chief Red. And it's 1965, they're ramping up for the war. And I used to visit up in Quonset, a naval base up in Newport, and see the ships. It was just a big thing for me. And I spoke to the chief. I said, listen, I don't want to be some guy that chips paint all day. And he said, gee, you ought to talk to Sergeant Lowler. I think he'd scare me, I guess. Next thing I know, I spoke to Sergeant Lowler. I'm down at the processing station down in Staten Island saying, no, sir, I don't have anything I can think of, but check if you need to, you know. And I ended up in the Marine Corps, which is where I wanted to go. I truly did. And I enjoyed it. I did well in the Marine Corps. I gained weight. I finally went to boot camp at 134 pounds, so that was kind of nice. But it was a good experience for me. It was 4 years, 65, 69. I was anxious to get into Vietnam because that's what Marines do. But my battalion, we trained for 1 year, which was a godsend. And I deployed to California and joined the 2nd Battalion, 26 Marines. We formed up there and went over to Vietnam. I stayed there. I got there in 66. I joined the 2nd Battalion, 9th Marines. I extended my tour for 6 months because that's what Marines do. It wasn't a political statement or anything. It's just what we do. And it was kind of interesting, though, because while I was there, I was a forward observer for 81-millimeter mortars. And it's a great job. You're out with the line company. You're going on night work and ambushes and things, which is interesting, too. I think it was my third firefight that I thought to myself, you know, I could have joined the Peace Corps and done the same thing, but I was there, and I did. I made rank fast as a corporal in May of 1967 and a sergeant in December 67. So I got 2 meritorious promotions. But the problem was when I got back to Camp Lejeune, I didn't know where a sergeant went. I went over there as a E2 right. And made E3 on the way over, and I really did not know what a sergeant did. I probably would have been a better instructor if they would have sent me there. Yeah. If they would have given me a sword for a parade, I'd probably cut my ear off because I had no idea. So it was a learning process. But
you know, and at that time... At that time, you served from 65 to 69, as you said, right? You get out in 1969. I mean, this is the year that Woodstock took place. This is really a turbulent time for the United States. And I imagine a turbulent time for you as you were leaving the Marine Corps that had been your life for 4 years. What do you remember most about that transition period? And how did things go for you? And how did society accept you or not accept you when you got out of the Corps?
I had one friend who had a hard time with me, but he had just gotten back. He was in the Army, and I still talk to him. He's up in Vermont. He has a hard problem with post-trauma stress disorder, and he was the only one that was not friendly, but we became friends like the next year. We were friends in high school. I had one old girlfriend saw me, and then this little kid comes up and grabs my leg and says, "Daddy, Daddy." And I looked at her and said, "Nah, I'm just kidding you. She could marry somebody else." But it was a funny time because I got out in April of that time. And I went to work for IBM because my sister worked there over at Armonk at the corporate headquarters. It was not for me. It was a different uniform, not for me. And my wife, my girlfriend at the time, and I were at a parade in Pearl River, New York, and I saw my old scoutmaster, because I went right from altar boy, Boy Scouts into the Marine Corps. I just changed uniforms. And he was there in a different uniform, and we got talking. He was the chief of the Rockland County Mounted Patrol. And he said, well, why don't you come with us? I don't own a horse, but I did. I went through the training, went through that, and became a deputy. And we were the only mounted police at the Woodstock Rock Festival.
Wow.
Well, when I tell that story, as you might remember, I was with Navy Campus Education Center before recruiting. I've been recruiting now 18 years. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
And not bad for an old Marine being Navy recruiting. But I would tell a story. Somebody would ask about how to become a policeman. I told the story. I said, and we were the only mounted police at the Woodstock Rock Festival. And the kid said, they assumed I probably retired in the 90s, you know, or something. And they said, did you see Green Day there? I thought to myself, Green Day, that's my lawn service. I was at the When Your Mom and Dad Were Out, where they were smoking some weed, saying will affect our kids. It did a little bit, yes. You know, it changed our culture. But it was an experience to be up there, and it was nothing controversial about it at all. I really just enjoyed enjoyed my time with the mounted police. I was going to go before. I met Sandy, my wife, on weekend pass, and we have a small tavern in my town, Nyack, New York, on the Hudson River.
Right.
And it was a family tavern. Everybody started drinking there. In New York, you could drink at 18 years old. Now, I'm not going to say she did, but a lot of people did sneak in when they were underage.
I think the statute of limitations has probably run out on that, Pete, if she's...
Yeah. But I did. I met her there and then fell in love. I was about to... it's not that I had a hard time at Camp Lejeune. It's just that I wasn't comfortable, and I was ready to go back to Vietnam, and I was going to enlist. I figured I'd stay in and re-enlist for 6 years, and I'm going to tell you, when you fall in love, all that stuff just disappears. So we've been married now. Well, in November, on November 28th, I will celebrate 28 years of wedded bliss.
The day before my birthday. Congratulations on that. We're speaking with United States Marine Corps and Vietnam veteran Pete Burden. Now, Pete currently works down at Navy Recruiting District Jacksonville. As he just told us, he was a deputy who was actually at Woodstock on a horse. Yeah, he was a mounted policeman at Woodstock. So lived quite the interesting life over the past few decades, and just got a little bit more interesting recently. As I introduced you, Pete, I talked about how when we met, how we kind of bonded a little bit over enjoying stand-up comedy, and I would go out to the Comedy Zone in Jacksonville occasionally. And of all the people I met in my 13 years, you were certainly, if not number one, then definitely in the top five of people to talk to every day. I like to go down to your office and check in. And, you know, you always had that love for stand-up comedy, but you've taken it a little bit further than that now, and you're actually doing stand-up comedy. So tell me about that and how you actually got started on taking that step. You know, let's be honest, a little bit later in life than many comedians do, but what made you finally do it, and what was that experience like your first time up on stage?
Oh, it was quite interesting. And stand-up comedy is different than being the clown at the office or the nice guy at the party, you know, has something to say. I belong to an organization in Jacksonville called Vets for Vets. Now we changed our name to, I think, Northeast Florida Vets for Vets. And what it is, once a quarter, we get together with all the veterans groups in the Northeast Florida area, Jacksonville Metro, Green Coast Springs and all. And we meet at the Veterans Auditorium downtown. The management has us there for free and gives us a lunch. And we talk among ourselves about how the Veterans of Foreign Wars can help this charity over here. And I say that because there are so many veterans charities, so many 501c's that people are trying to do some good work for. I met a husband and wife who go out and go to funeral directors and identify the remains of veterans, usually cremated, that have been left there for years, and then they make sure they get a proper burial at the National Cemetery. And that's just one small example. And so I thought to myself, you know, if we could get excuse me, I got Eric's cold.
Hey, it passes through the radio.
If we can get some comics, maybe do a benefit to help, maybe some veteran comics. So I sent an email to Mr. Posen, who's the manager of the Ramada Inn Comedy Zone. Very nice man. Very, very helpful. Again, my apologies. And he didn't get the email. It just went through somebody else. But I got on their mailing list to do what? So I got an email that said they're having a workshop for stand-up comedy starting, and it was August of 3 years ago. So I went really to talk to him, and I spoke to him, and he didn't get the email. It got bypassed somewhere. And he wasn't even too sure if he had any veterans there. Oddly enough, the man standing next to him who ran the managed the Comedy Zone, Bob Lover, was a veteran, a Navy veteran, and he's been doing stand-up comedy. He's on the road with Grandma Lee from America's Got Talent. But anyway, I got talking to him, and then I got talking to an Army recruiter, a veteran, and he said, I'll try. So I did, and I went to the course for 8 weeks. I'm going to tell you, you know, you've been to briefings with me. I'm very at ease talking to people, and I'll joke with them and all, and I have a lot of fun. But you come out on that stage, and those lights hit you for the first time. I felt like Mr. Magoo. I couldn't find the microphone. I stuttered. I did this and that. But I learned a lot. I learned a lot about the stage presence and how to organize your thoughts and organize. I do all original material. I don't pack from anybody else. Sometimes at the end of my routine, if I have time, I'll tell my favorite joke from Alan King. You know, but I'll give him the credit for that and say, you know, jokes shouldn't die at the end of some book somewhere. But it was really really an experience. But, boy, once I got into it, I just craved it. You know, more time up on the stage. And I really owe it all to the other people down there. Were very encouraging, too, and very helpful, giving advice. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but it's a creative experience, and I'm in my third year now, and I've had chances to do other shows in St. Augustine and around the metro area here, and it's really nice to meet different people, and it's just a thrill for me. And like you, I swear I should have gone into journalism. I enjoy talking to the comics, and I get to meet them. That's nice.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of being friends with some stand-up comedians over the years, coming into contact with them because of my recent jobs and stuff as well. Just had a couple of big ones come through here this week. Both Rich Voss and Steve-O were here at CBS Radio this week. So yeah. I got to see both of them and chat with both of them for just a little bit. So, you know, one of the interesting things about this, Pete, I mean, people are hearing that you've now been doing stand-up comedy for 3 years, and you are a Vietnam veteran who served in 1965. Now, if we do the math from 65, subtract 18 years, that puts you being born, what, 47 or something like that? So that puts you at
actually 47.
70 years old or approaching 70 now. Now, right. Getting into stand-up comedy at 67 years old, that's late in the game for a lot of people. Did you ever have any concerns about starting off so late in it, or was that really the impetus for you getting into it? Like, hey, you know, there's no time like the present.
That's exactly what it was. And it's hard to accept your aging. I'll be 71 in January, and it's funny, too, because for the first half of the year, I'm 70 years old. In July, I'm on the other side, now I'm almost 70, you know? So it's hard for me to get used to that, and I did. And it's funny, I work with, as you know, a lot of young kids in the Navy, and we get along fine. I have trouble sometimes with kids older than my grandchildren, just a bit, because we we don't have anything in common except for the other veterans. And I've been able to identify other veterans over there, and we've bonded together. And some have gone on to other things, and we still keep in touch. The Veterans Brotherhood is different. And when I tell a joke to a veteran or someone in active duty, it's received different than it is when I say to a civilian.
Right.
And if I can just step on one news item, my personal opinion is that's what happened with President Trump when he spoke to the widow. General Kelly is a warrior, and his casualty officer was a warrior and spoke to him as warriors talk about. It's hard for a civilian to understand, you know, as civilians, we'll say things like if the person died on the job, oh, he died doing what he loves to do, or gardening or something. It's hard to understand that when we join the military, we know what we're getting into, and we know what may or may not happen, and we pray for the best, we train for the best, you know, circumstances. And I don't want to touch on that, but I really felt for the president. He thought he was saying the right thing, and he had some good advice from General Kelly, who's a terrific Marine. And it just didn't work for that moment. So
yeah.
I hope they all get past it and not use this to make a big political statement over the passing of our warrior. And that's all I'll say about that. But your question, it's different for me up there. I talk a lot about getting older, and it's fun. Let's go back to the fun part. It's fun what I do. And I enjoy being around the other veterans, too. They have some neat stories that they tell. And although there's so many generations apart, it's almost the same stories that you and I have gone through, you know, the silly things. It's really just a joy to be there. Bob Lavar is a terrific comedian. I really like him a lot. And he's doing what he loves to do. But he talks about, he's 6'5", and he says, when he joined the Navy, the first place he sent him was to the land of the little people, the Philippines.
Ah.
So he jokes about that and his Philippine wife. And so it's things we can relate to as veterans. So.
There are those connections between veterans, and, you know, there are a lot of veterans out there, I think, Pete, and as the Vietnam veteran generation gets older, you know, pretty much every Vietnam veteran is going to be in there, at least in their 60s at this point, you know, maybe now is the time to start chasing those dreams like you have, if they haven't had the opportunity to do it, something they wanted to do but haven't done yet. You know, what would you say to someone who's out there and maybe has something that they've always thought about doing but haven't pulled the trigger and may now be thinking, well, you know, I'm getting up there. Maybe it's too late to do it. What would you say to someone who's in that kind of a situation?
I would say, of course, it's never too late. And take the opportunity. Here's what I tell my daughters, my 35-year-old, my 21-year-old, especially the 21-year-old who has to be independent. Follow your dreams. Do what you can to find your path. She works out. She's going to college online at the community college. I think she's going. But she works out at a ranch and does trail rides. And she works with autistic children. And she's finding different things. But that's been my philosophy for my whole life. And I did try different things. I tried the mounted police. I was a volunteer fireman. And I learned, as much as I respect those two people, that's not my job. That's not my career path. And I've been in probation and parole and drug counseling and a drug counselor, not in. I've tried many different things to get where I am. But just like the scoutmaster, Mr. Ellsworth, it was there at the right time. People have been along the line and they've been able to nudge me in a different direction and you know, give me some sort of a move. So I think throughout your life you need to. Well, let me say this. My wife works in television and as an account executive, has done that for many years. It's been her whole career. She's well respected. She ought to retire, but she's so darn good at it, she just stays a little bit longer. If it wasn't for her stability, I wouldn't have been able to try different things. And some things you fail at, you pick up, you go someplace else. Yeah. I've had the ability to start a job where I can step back in pay because I know it's going to lead to something else. So I've always said follow your dreams and be realistic about them, you know. I'll never be an astronaut. I figured that out.
But there, you did figure out that, hey, there was no time like the present, and you could get up on that stage and be a stand-up comedian, something that you had dreamed of doing. We've been speaking with Pete Burden. Pete is a Marine Corps veteran, Vietnam veteran, former police officer, who was actually a mounted police officer at Woodstock, believe it or not, and now, just 3 years ago, at the age of 67, started doing stand-up comedy in the Jacksonville, Florida area. Pete, as we close out here in our last 30 seconds, if people want to find out more about your stand-up or more about the charities that you work with, where can they go to do that?
Oh, you know, I am so slow on social media. I'm on Facebook. That's about it, Eric.
All right.
I know, yeah, every comic's supposed to do that, but I haven't done any of it.
He hasn't done it yet, but he will be there soon. And you will have an article up on ConnectingVets.com talking about Pete Burden. Hey, it's been a great week. Thank you so much to all of our guests. For myself, Eric Dame, and producer Jake Hughes, have a great and safe weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.